Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome in hour two of the Mike Allen Show here on a big day in the Catholic Church, June 29th. This is an ancient feast. It's also shared by our Orthodox brothers and sisters. June 29th, the feast day of Saints Peter and Paul, apostles in Rome, both martyred in Rome, probably within a year or so of each other. Saint Peter, of course, crucified upside down, according to tradition, because he said he was not worthy to die in the same manner as his Lord. Paul, who was a Roman citizen, received the more merciful execution. I'm doing that in air quotes, I guess, by being beheaded for the faith. And, of course, both of whom are buried in Rome. I guess St. Paul at St. Paul outside the walls and St. Peter there at St. Peter's Basilica. And also perform the apostolic foundation in many ways of the church Christ founded. Saints Peter and Paul, pray for us here on this feast day. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to be a part of the program at all today. 573-4-BREAD-4, you can call or text. Or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. We'll be talking with Chelsea Zimmerman in the next couple of segments, actually. We'll be talking about the sale of fetal body parts, which was all in the news with the sting operations done against various Planned Parenthoods. But as Chelsea says in her blog, reflectionsofaparalytic.com, this is an issue that goes beyond Planned Parenthood, and we need to see it for what it is. We'll also talk about the issue of cosmetic surgery, particularly elective cosmetic surgery, and asking the question of the day, at what point does cosmetic surgery, is it moral or immoral? Where is that line where you have unnecessary elective cosmetic surgery? Prompted by some comments that Pope Francis made recently at a mass he celebrated on the Jubilee for the sick and persons with disabilities. And he talked about this tendency we have in the world of thinking that sick or disabled persons cannot be happy. We have this obsession with so-called perfection of the body and so forth. And it also connects with a statement from the Vatican last year, which condemned plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, elective plastic surgery as an aggression against women, warning that procedures such as facelifts and tummy tucks are a form of aggression that threaten female identity. Surgical alterations in appearance can amputate the expressive possibilities of the human. And so my question is where is that line, right? Because certainly there are cosmetic surgeries that are elective, but are maybe understandable. Others which certainly maybe blend over into sort of an enhanced or augmented, almost a transhumanist type of approach that Chelsea and I have talked a little bit about. So where do you think that line is? Love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4. Call or text. Email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post your response on Facebook or Twitter. We'll also spin the Dollar Catechism wheel this hour and talk about elections and false dichotomies. We were talking at the end of the last hour about this most exclusive brotherhood on the planet that Elizabeth Scalia, known as the Anchoress, blogged about on her Patheos blog. And that was this friendship, this brotherhood of sorts between Pope Francis and Pope Emeritus Benedict, yesterday being the 65th anniversary of Joseph Ratzinger's ordination of the priesthood. Actually, today is the official anniversary, but they celebrated it yesterday. He was ordained back in 1951 on the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul. And there was a great warmth, if you've seen any of the video coverage of it, shared between the two men, both together. Pope Benedict, now 89 years old, looking very, very frail in the video, and yet very obviously very clear in his cognition. Elizabeth Scalia said in witnessing, she said, "I think of the two witnesses in the book of Revelation, two olive trees and the two lampstands, who fully understand and appreciate each other." As she writes, "What exists between Francis and Benedict has never existed before. It is a supernatural brotherhood, exclusive and unlike any other on earth. And perhaps only these two men fully appreciate and understand what Benedict set in motion." And as she said, "What currents the bark of Peter?" The bark of Peter is, bark means boat. The bark of Peter, the church, must ride before this long and mysterious voyage toward restoration comes to its completion. And so when you think about Francis and Benedict, these two very different personalities, very different temperaments, it appears obvious, two very different maybe in their approach to governance and to teaching. And almost from the beginning of Francis' papacy, there have been those who've wanted to drive a wedge between the two. There have even been those who at least strongly hint or even outrightly suggest that Benedict had no authority to resign, therefore he is the true pontiff and Francis is an anti-pope. And yet not once in Francis's 3.5 years in the papacy has there been any sort of indication, any sort of quote, any sort of whisper of opposition between the two, or undermining from Pope Emeritus Benedict of what Francis is trying to do. In fact, that's one of the things that Francis talked about, was the loyalty that he had seen in Pope Benedict XVI, who referred to Pope Francis when he first spoke to Francis in his remarks yesterday as Holy Father. So I think it's an interesting parallel to what the relationship between Peter and Paul must have been like. Because one of the misconceptions, I think, sometimes in the Catholic Church is that unity means uniformity, when it doesn't. Oh, my goodness. If you're Catholic, you know that you can have 10 men, for example, all wearing the priestly collar in front of you, looking very uniform in their dress. But those priests, in terms of who they are and their person, is different. There's different in their preaching. There's different in their governance. There's different in their temperament, their senses of humor, everything across the board. And yet they're all priests. They're all unified in the one mission. But I don't know why I had this illusion myself when I became Catholic, that all priests were kind of essentially the same. Oh my goodness, they're so different. But there's something beautiful in that too, in that. And this is, I think, the nature of even the incarnation of God, the Son, taking on human flesh, is that when we become a child of God, and when God has us on the path to sainthood, which is his desire for all of us, he does not destroy our temperament, but elevates it and redeems it. Therefore, we bring the entirety of our human self and all that we are into this divine life. Grace builds upon nature. And so with Saints Peter and Paul, just as with Benedict and Francis, or Jorge Bergoglio and Joseph Ratzinger, we are all very different. And Saints Peter and Paul, very, very different. Paul, very much from an elite Jewish background, highly educated under the legendary Rabbi Gamaliel, somebody known for his zeal as a Pharisee in persecuting members of the Way, the earliest Christians, Paul, also known as Saul. Peter, a common fisherman, I'm sure not intellectually erudite. I mean, part of the remarkable thing about St. Peter and his writing is this was a common man. This was a blue-collar man, transformed, grace-building upon nature by the Spirit. And there is evidence that Saints Peter and Paul did not always see eye to eye on things. Both type A personalities, both with their own emphases. Paul, even in one of his letters, I think it's his letter to the Galatians, calling out Saint Peter for failing to live up to the truth that they both knew. So, you know, that had to be an interesting dynamic and relationship between the two. St. Paul also being very clear that his identity as an apostle did not come to him from the other apostles, of which Peter was the chief, but from a revelation of Jesus Christ himself. The readings, of course, we talked about in the last hour, the first one being from the book of Acts, St. Peter's being delivered, at least for the time being, from Herod's chains. You wonder if St. Peter wondered before his own crucifixion, would he be then liberated again? But in this time, it was not to be. St. Paul facing his own martyrdom, this beautiful, tender letter to Timothy, says, I am already being poured out like a libation, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have competed well. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. From now on, the crown of righteousness awaits me, which the Lord, the just judge, will award to me on that day, not only to me, but to all who have longed for his appearance. One thing these two men both have in common is a witness of how to die, and of how to face the end of one's life, whether that's part of the natural course of events and age, or whether it's forced upon us to face it with courage and with boldness. And we so often think, we get it so wrong. We think, oh, well, if I had lived back then, it'd be so much easier to be a Christian. No, it would not. You had no New Testament. You had no theological heritage. You only had this bold new movement. Was it worth giving your life for? For Saints Peter and Paul, yes, it was. Saints Peter and Paul, pray for us that we'll have your courage and fortitude. And thank you for all you've done. We'll be back with Chelsea Zimmerman here on The Mike Allen Show. Check out more of our shows, breadboxmedia.com.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Pray for the people of Istanbul. For those of you have not seen the news yet, terrible terrorist attack in the airport last night. Keep those who have died in your prayers for eternal rest, for those wounded, for healing, for those terrorized, for comfort, and for those who are investigating that those who have been responsible for this act may be brought to justice, and just for our world in general. So much rage, terror, fear. We need God's grace, no doubt, in the midst of all this. Pleased to have on via Skype this morning my monthly guest, Chelsea Zimmerman. Chelsea, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com, both from some of her own personal experiences and her observations on the world, of particularly of bioethics. And she's also the editor-in-chief of catholiclane.com from beautiful Pensacola, Florida, the Panhandle. Chelsea Zimmerman. Chelsea, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me again.
Yes, it's this terror stuff never seems to end, does it? I mean, of course, you're not that far away from ground zero of the Orlando shootings, and it's just it seems like one more blow after another.
Yeah, it's that was definitely a little too close to home for me. Not too far from Orlando here, and yeah, it's. And it just keeps on happening, doesn't it?
It does. And then also, I'm sure you've been paying attention, not a very good week in the Supreme Court with the decision on the Texas regulations, and then also the decision yesterday not to hear the case of Washington State pharmacists who objected in conscience to giving the Plan B, the contraceptive. We definitely have a fight against us with the nation's highest court.
Yes, we definitely do. And no telling what either candidate would give us. Well, I mean, I think we pretty much know what we might get with one of them. The other one, I'm not quite sure what he'll exactly how he'll, you know, who he'll pick and what kind of justices we might get from him. It's very questionable. Even just going from now into the future, what's going to happen there?
Well, it reiterates too that, you know, we even though we can't ignore the governments and courts and everything, what we really need is a conversion of conscience in the American culture for sure. And I know one of those issues that we had hoped would bring about a soul searching here in the U.S., and I'm not sure it's gotten a hold. Unfortunately, it's kind of been swept under the radar. This fetal body parts scandal, which, you know, you first had the sting videos that were broken by the Center for Scientific Progress, exposing what appeared to be very clearly a selling of fetal body parts. Of course, that immediately fell into this whole debate about whether or not the tapes had been doctored and all this kind of stuff. But in your most recent blog post on Reflections of a Paralytic, you talk about how this is an issue that goes beyond just Planned Parenthood.
Well, it became a Planned Parenthood issue because that's what they were doing the undercover videos with, or, you know, it was with Planned Parenthood, and it exposed, you know, them appearing to negotiate the sale of fetal body parts. And these videos, and we've talked about these before, and this was about a year, going on a year ago, they triggered a congressional investigation into the relationship between the abortion industry and what they call fetal procurement organizations, and whether or not, mostly what they're concerned about is whether or not there's any buying and selling or profit being made, which is against the law. And that's what the videos appeared to show. And so I actually came across recently an interview with Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, who's on this. It's called the Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, which runs to the end of the year. And there's actually been, they actually have been releasing a lot of their findings, what they've been finding lately. And I was actually really interested in it because, you know, for most people, this is, these investigations, it's been called like a plan. It's led to a Planned Parenthood investigation. And even with the Daily Caller, you know, the interviewer mentioned to Representative Blackburn that, you know, most of the pro-lifers who were, you know, watching the interview, they're all concerned about Planned Parenthood and, you know, their role in selling aborted fetal body parts. And Representative Blackburn actually did a good job of kind of explaining why, you know, this is really larger than just Planned Parenthood. In fact, she said they haven't even subpoenaed any Planned Parenthood officials to give them any information just yet. You know, what she said was currently the panel is actually investigating what you might call the buyers or seeking bank records from these fetal procurement agencies. That's kind of who they're looking at right now. Those are the ones who get the fetal body parts from Planned Parenthood and other abortion clinics and then sell them and give them to researchers. And so they are trying to determine whether they too are making a profit from the sale of aborted fetal body parts. She said, because there's some evidence that they are, she said in one invoice, they found that taxes were being charged on the quote sale of baby brains.
Oh, Lord, you know, have mercy.
I mean, exactly. And, you know, she said, if you're charging a tax, that would lead you to believe it's not like the organ donation programs, that this is something that's moved into a profit motive structure. And it's like she said, and, you know, it's very concerning, not just what this means for the babies, but what this does to the women, because it's a profit motive structure and it's turned pregnant women into a profit center, not just for abortion clinics, but for fetal procurement agencies as well.
Yeah, one of the things you mentioned, we're here with Chelsea Zimmerman, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com, that there's even evidence of some medical privacy violations of some of these procurement companies working with abortion clinics.
Yeah, they said there in some of their findings, there's some evidence that these procurement companies actually work with abortion clinics to review the medical files of women who are scheduled to have an abortion in order to basically, you know, say what body parts they need and, you know, to match the requested gestational age and sex and, you know, basically to get what they want, you know, to say, okay, these are the gestational ages we have going in for abortions right now. What do you, you know, we need this, that, and the other thing from them. And, you know, that's also something that they're going to have to look at is these privacy issues that you're seeing. And, you know, just with the women there in the abortion clinics. And so, and that's really concerning because, you know, as Rebecca and I talked about in a previous episode of BioTalk, it's like what happens when the demand outweighs the supply? You know, I mean, they're already getting information about women scheduled for abortions. What about, you know, just women who come in who are just pregnant in general and maybe thinking about abortions? Is there going to be more pressure on women to get abortions in order to, quote, donate, you know, body parts for research in these kind of situations? Because in one of the undercover videos, one of the STEM Express CEOs admitted they're already working with something like triple digit number of clinics. And she said in the video that we still need more. So, you know, what you're seeing and what's really concerning here is that there's, you know, there's this, it's created a market for human baby body parts. And that's what's really concerning. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to do with just Planned Parenthood. It's the fact that there's become this market for body parts. And that's, you know, that's why there's Planned Parenthood is selling these body parts. And so, I mean, to me, you know, Representative Blackburn didn't say, you know, what type of action they're gonna come up with, you know, from all these findings. But what I've talked about even last year is, you know, the real issue here is we need to stop using tissue from abortion in research. I mean,
so the issue we shouldn't just approach this from the supply end. We should approach it from the demand end.
Exactly. I mean, if we're really concerned about the fact that there's been the outrage that this is going on, you know, the disgust, you know, there was one of the headlines from some of the findings from this panel. There was a live action news headline breaking: abortion clinic provided whole brains for youth summer camp. And it's a disgust just that this transactions are happening, that aborted fetal tissue is being used in this way, and the fact of the matter is that part's legal.
Right, it's been legal the whole time. We're about out of time for this segment, Chelsea, so hold on tight. Mm-hmm. We'll be back with Chelsea Zimmerman, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com, also editor-in-chief at catholiclane.com. If you've got a question, 573-4-BREAD-4. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
have back with me via Skype Chelsea Zimmerman, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com, also the editor-in-chief of catholiclane.com. If you've got a comment or a question for Chelsea, we've been talking about this scandal of the sale of fetal body parts, first brought to attention through the Planned Parenthood videos, but a scandal that goes beyond the Planned Parenthood borders. If you had a question or a comment, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text or email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Chelsea, from the Diocese of Pensacola, Tallahassee, we were talking off air that you have the tallest bishop.
I don't know that that's actual fact, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I found a Catholic News Agency article when he was back in, I think, 2012, became the bishop there. He said, I'm 6'8", and I believe I've heard, I will be the tallest bishop in the United States. So,
He is a very tall man. I've gone out to communion with him before, and it was he was very much towering over me.
6'8", that's amazing. And maybe he was a basketball player. And speaking of basketball, of course, Billy Donovan, they looked like he were going to get it done versus the Warriors, but fell just short.
I was really hoping, rooting for him, obviously. But that's not bad for a first year.
Well, he's a devout Catholic, even if he was a Gator. You know, he's got some good qualities, so that's good. Well, let's get back in. We were talking about this fetal body parts thing, and as you were talking about, you know, we've concentrated so much on the supply aspect of it, and that these businesses like Planned Parenthood are making fetal body parts available for sale or distribution, that we've neglected to talk about the demand side. And as you said, you know, it is a totally legal practice to use fetal material as research. Material.
I mean, you know, and I understand, you know, the outcry, and it's, you know, the outcry after these has been, you know, defund Planned Parenthood, and this is just another kind of thing where we've got against them, really, you know. But at the same time, you know, this is another problem. Their actual research is a problem, and it's the reason we're seeing this happen, and it's been going on for decades. It's considered ethical and legal, and actually is even subsidized by the federal government in many cases. And, you know, to me, we should be treating this much like we treated the embryonic stem cell debate, you know, putting pressure on lawmakers to defund and outlaw this research, not just Planned Parenthood, but this research that's being done. And then two, putting pressure on scientists to pursue ethical alternatives. Because if we don't, and my friend Rebecca Taylor has written about this before, you know, we risk ending up with a medical system that's inextricably linked to the abortion industry. You know, they're starting to, it's debatable how effective this research is, but it's being done. And the longer it's being done, the more they're going to find. And we're going to have, you know, we're going to end up with medical treatments that are linked to this. We already have that in many cases, you know, the vaccine debates that we have, and some of the vaccines that have been developed through fetal tissue. And it's just going to get worse from there if we continue to let this be a legal practice.
Yeah, the whole fight against abortion. I was talking about this a little bit last hour with the health regulations in Texas being struck down by the Supreme Court. You know, there's that whole, you know, Jesus said, "Be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves." And you know, in fighting against abortion, there are times we need to look at different angles to come in on, not being deceptive per se, but understanding that sometimes a full frontal assault on an issue in which the court seems entrenched in this idea that it's a constitutional right, maybe just like there was the great model of, I think, of how slavery was fought in Great Britain, abolition. You know, they tried for years a full frontal assault, and they came at it sort of from an economic angle that made it less lucrative to be in the slave trade, and it made it easier then to win over support, and maybe the same sort of idea here. I don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's one of the things I kind of actually thought about this whole, you know, the call to defund Planned Parenthood is something we've been wanting to do for years, not just because of this. But, you know, if we are really concerned about this research, you know, defunding Planned Parenthood, to me, that would give them even more of an incentive to want to sell fetal, to get into the fetal body parts selling. When you take away some of their income, they're going to be looking to make that up in other ways. You know, not that we shouldn't defund Planned Parenthood, but that's only part of it. That's only going to solve part of this particular problem. We need to go at the research itself, because that might give Planned Parenthood even more incentive to go for it.
And I think the benefit maybe of how this issue was first brought to people's attention, it maybe awoke a little bit some of the so-called moderate middle who, you know, really they're fine with abortion being legal as long as they don't have to think about what it is.
Right.
But when it's kind of put up in their face that this is the, you know, this kind of language and this grotesque discussions about baby brains and stuff. I mean, Planned Parenthood sort of had a PR nightmare on their hands because, again, you know, as long as we can ignore it, you know, then we can be sort of in the middle about it. But when this stuff comes up, it does sort of shock the sensibilities, I think.
It does. And it definitely helped in that way, you know, just going after Planned Parenthood and just the abortion issue itself.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.